And hello, this is Chris Parker with the Business Simplicity Podcast. I have just had a conversation with Danny Davis, who's a M&A, merger and acquisition specialist, and he advises his integration manager on all sorts of sizes of deals. And we had a really interesting conversation around how to plan and actually deliver an integration. And we got into different dimensions on how they fail, importance of culture, and how to do this with really a rigid discipline structure, with I think absolute focus. And absolutely, for me it was fascinating to see how something so complex can be not simplified, but it can be made understandable. So, Danny, why do you think this would be really valuable for people to listen to it?
So Chris, as you just said, we talked about the planning and delivery of the integration. So I think for people that are thinking of buying a company and planning an integration, all of that will be useful. And for anyone that's going through an integration, either in the acquirer or the target company, listening to how these things are planned and thought through will also be very useful to you.
The Business Simplicity Podcast, where leaders share their most successful strategies and the failures that inspired them, so business owners and managers can avoid the suffering and reap the benefits. With your host, Chris Parker.
And hello, this is Chris Parker, and we're back with the Business Simplicity Podcast. And I'm having a conversation with Danny Davis, and he is an expert on mergers and acquisitions, integration, post-merger integrations, and also, separations, because those things go in multiple ways. And I met Danny, well, I started following Danny on LinkedIn a number of years ago, and ended up getting his book, M&A Integration, How to Do It, Planning and Delivering M&A Integration for Business Success, and was fortunate enough to be able to in a small way, benefit from his practical wisdom when I was working on some integrations in my last organization. And I think, I'm just delighted to share this with you. It's just this fresh approach to something that can be otherwise extremely complex. So if somebody's been able to simplify mergers and acquisitions, integrations for l not only small companies, but massive global organizations, this is Danny. So Danny, welcome. Can you maybe in your own words kick us off with what is it that you do, Danny Davis?
Oh, hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. So I plan and run integrations. So pre-deal, 3, 6, 9 months, even a couple of years pre-deal, thinking about which companies are going to be easiest to integrate and gain the most synergies. And then as we get closer to the deal, planning the synergies, planning how we're going to put the companies together, working with the CEO and CFO and then the top team. And then going into actually buying the company and the delivery phase of delivering all of the changes, restructures, and the synergies so that we've got a business that has delivered the profit, but also is fit to move forward. We've got a 5 or 10 year strategy, so we're trying to make it fit for purpose. So that's what I want. Well, that's what I do. Sounds very simple when you articulate it in a few little words.
Yeah, it does sound rather simple. I'm wondering, like, why? How hard can this be? I'm drawing off just some key points from our conversation and also from your book, but integrations oftentimes fail, meaning an organization or a group of shareholders, private equity, acquire one or multiple companies, stack them together with an intention in mind. But oftentimes, I believe that in that goal isn't always achieved. What's your experience as far as success ratios, or I guess what's the risk of not hiring someone like Danny Davis to help you out with this stuff?
So I think every company tries to do this on their own without external help. And that, I guess, depends on how complex the deal is, how complex the integration is. Do you know what you're doing? Have you done it lots of times before? And then as the deals become more complex, larger synergies, if we're talking about 10 people buying 5 people, perhaps, we could discuss that over a beer for half an hour and I can just tell you what to do. But if we're starting to talk about 100 people buying 20 or 30 people, it might take us a few days or a week to discuss it. And as we start to move up and I bought a FTSE 100, then it might take me 3 or 4 years to discuss how to do it and move through. So I think, certainly from my viewpoint, these things can be very complex. So I compare them to if you're doing a change program or a transformation. So I ran I was number two project manager on a $500 million spend HR transformation. And we're just looking at HR, and that's difficult enough. So people are used to doing a transformation within IT, within finance. Well, when we do an integration, we're going to look at each of the areas of the company, every business unit, every function, every country, and potentially we're going to move them all. Whether we're chopping bits up and moving them around, whether we're integrating finance and the systems. So the discussion of, I think, once we discuss a particular topic, I can explain it quite simply and you go, yes, of course, that's how we would do that. And we just need to have that conversation on 5 to 10,000 things. Now, if it's a smaller deal, a smaller project, fine. It's not going to be 5 to 10,000 discussions. But I think the discussion really is, if you were going to run a project, would you attack it with a blank bit of paper, or would you learn how to do project management? And I think you'd say, oh, let's go and learn how to do project management. And that's the same for anything. You just go and speak to someone who knows how to do it. And the discussion here is we're trying to increase profit. So we go and spend, an amount of money by a company, 100 million, a billion. There's synergies that go with that, 10 million, 100 million, $500 million of synergies. And so how quickly can we deliver the extra profit is really what we're after here. We're going to discuss all sorts of other things around systems and functions and business units, but really it's the money. We're going to spend a big chunk of money and we're going to create more profit. And that's really what this is all about.
And where do these go wrong? Because we're soon going to get into a how do you plan and run an integration? We're going to try to condense that down into a few sound bites, if that's even possible. But where do integrations go disastrously wrong?
So if I go along that route, you were talking about the planning and the delivery and then the tracking. So if I start to think about planning pre-deal, what we might do is we might gather some information about our company and how it works, and gather some information about the target company and how it works. Once we've got, let's imagine, I was actually having this conversation with someone the other day who's integration director at a company. And he said, I just don't know where to start. So let's look at finance or HR or IT or wherever we like. How do we work? And it turns out most companies, the executives right at the top, if we're getting to any sort of decent size, even past 100 or 200 people, they don't really understand how our company works. And as we move to 500, 1,000, I've done a deal with 100,000 people. And you say, well, how does this division work? And I kind of want to know top to bottom, side to side, if we're going to be integrating it. So how do we work? And we can do that pre-deal. And we can spend time, I can just say, go and do it. It doesn't cost any money because we're going to do it internally. Now, understanding how we work is, everything we're going to discuss, you can mess up. And so when you say, where do these things fail? They fail on anything we discuss. So now that we know how our company works, let's pretend we've done that well. We're then going to find out how the target company works. Well, we've got due diligence. That process is, the aim of it is to find out as much as we can pre-deal. But the aim of the seller is not necessarily to tell us everything. If you're going to sell your house to me, you walk me in, you've painted behind the door where the dry rot is, and you don't, I don't see that. You whiz me around the house in 5 minutes and you say, brilliant, buy the house. Let's not negotiate. And so there are professionals like me, I do integration. There are professionals who run due diligence on the buy side, on the sell side. People, I've been doing this 30 years. There are people that do this for a living. And so there's, when I speak at London Business School, I call it a game. Imagine that you're the CEO of a large company. You've never done a deal before. So there are people knocking around with 30 years experience on due diligence in IT, in operations, on the buy side, on the sell side. There's people that are experienced in negotiation. There are people experienced in carve out, because we need to carve this business out of the target and then we need to integrate it over here. So the discussion is, well, where are you getting your knowledge from and how are you playing the game? And when we start to negotiate on big deals, there's a lot of money on the table.
And a lot of people are in. I'm curious, there's the integration planning and then there's the due diligence. So this is the internal acquiring side and then the to be acquired side. Something that we were doing recently in my organization was we'd crafted the internal design, if you will, in what we called a reference architecture. And then we actually provided that reference architecture to the due diligence experts. So they at least had an idea of what we were all about. So then they could orient on not only synergies, but also dis-synergies and say, well, hey, you know, this part of your business just doesn't add up. You know, you're using vastly different technologies here. You're organized here. The customer targets are wildly different or very, very similar. Do you often engage with the due diligence people to give them, I guess, a heads up on the lay of the land on what it will be integrated into?
Yeah, most definitely. So I work alongside the pre-deal strategy. Then we've got the due diligence, we've got the valuation, we've got the discounted cash flow, you know, part of the valuation. The synergies that I'm going to plan and deliver go into that. If we go back to the due diligence, thinking about questions we can ask. So I can sit as part of the diligence team and they might be trying to decide, is there a reason that we would not buy this company? Or they might be saying, well, this is going to take X more than we think, so we're going to negotiate this off. So there's various different things the diligence team are trying to do. Whereas pre-deal, I'm trying to plan the integration. So I'm trying to ask questions that will enable integration. So for example, if we think about customers, a diligence team might be asking for a list of customers with revenue. The target says, no, you can't have a list of customers, but we'll anonymize them. A, B, C, D, E, and you can have our top 10, and then we'll tell you the rest in, you know, so we're not, because you don't want to give your list of customers to a competitor. But if I'm trying to plan, I think of an example deal where we had retail outlets. And so I'm trying to plan where our retail outlets will be and where the targets are and where our customers are. So in the diligence, I can ask for half a postcode. So I don't want the full postcode and name and address of a customer, but just call them customer one and give me half a postcode. I can plot them on a GIS on a map together with mine. And I can very quickly start to plan where we want our retail network and start to then think about how we're going to be integrating. And as part of diligence, ask for some of the contracts on the properties, which we might well have done anyway, but might not pop out as, you know, people are checking it for certain reasons. I want to check it for other reasons. And so really it's a discussion of, for the integration planning and the delivery, how can I get my information, you know, earlier? So the discussion is, if I'm delivering something, so let's pretend I deliver £100 of synergies and it takes me a year and it costs me £200. So I've got a 2-year payback. That's, you know, I'm happy with that. Some deals are better, some deals are worse, but you know, let's start with that and then move off. Because I give you that because lots of people don't know where to start with how a synergy is supposed to work. So if we start with that, so if I could deliver my synergies in 6 months instead of a year, then I'm going to deliver £50 extra profit. So will it cost me more than the £200 to deliver it quicker? Well, I'm happy to pay an extra £100 to deliver it 6 months quicker. So if I can get some of that during due diligence effectively for free, I could deliver my integration faster and I can make more profit, make more synergies. And also we've got the discussion around uncertainty. So if I'm potentially going to change the retail outlets in across the acquirer and the target, and people are sitting around for a year not knowing what's going to happen, if I can tell them after 6 months I've got less uncertainty, people don't know whether they've got a job, where customers don't know where they can buy their things. Competitors use that to their advantage. So really the pre-deal from an integration viewpoint is how can I, you know, on any project I'm going to plan and deliver. And quite regularly, if you're internal in a company doing a project, we say, oh, there is a payback, but it overran. Well, I can count my payback in, you know, pounds and dollars and euros. And I can say, well, we planned to deliver 100 million of profit and I delivered 120 million of profit and the deal only needed 70 million of profit. And so when you ask the question of where do these fail, there's all the discussions around we can fail on anything we do, but really the failure comes actually at the synergies level, which really, and not to be, I don't know how to word this without seeming impolite, you're never going to know. So the CEO, the CFO and me, we get the discounted cash flow and we know exactly what we're paying and what the synergies are. And so if I have to hit 100 million of synergies and I deliver 80, the deal's failed. I mean, hopefully no one knows about it. All the integration went swimmingly well. I've done deals where I over-delivered the synergies by 70%, and you know nobody knew that was the case. You know, but so the discussion around whether it's a failure or not is very, very closely guarded. And there's lots of companies that do brilliant deals, have great strategy, and make lots of money. Now, within that deal, you could annoy a few people. You know, we might buy a company for its technology and not really be bothered about the people. So I interviewed for my book somebody who, they were a big manufacturing company and they wanted to change their IT system. And they got a quote, they were big global, they got a quote from an IT company and said, that'll cost us about 35 million to buy and implement. So they found a competitor which had the system and about 400 people. And they said, we'll buy this for 15 million. We'll give the integration person a budget of about 7 million to implement taking the computer system over. We'll use all the people in the target as best we can to teach our people. And I remember interviewing this guy for the book and he explained that's what they'd done. And within the first 5 minutes of the talk, he explained to me that they'd been amazingly successful because they'd spent about 27 million and saved themselves 7 million. Now it happens that his boss then left him on the integration for a year and said, you know, make good of this business. So they kept a few of the people and they kept a few of the customers. And for about three quarters of an hour, he explained how terrible their integration was and how bad it was. And at the end of the call, I said, well, let me just summarize what I heard. Your integration and your deal were amazingly successful because you implemented what the deal wanted and your strategy and you saved millions of pounds. Yes. You then saved some of the business and saved some of the customers on paper, didn't need them. But you saved, you know, I can't remember the numbers. Let's say a quarter of the people and a quarter of the customers. So you then actually got free customers and free people on top of that. And you were given zero budget, which is how I know that no one really was bothered about that. Yes. And so your deal was ridiculously successful for the business. You had 3 or 4 months of great success. And then you went through 7 months of hardship where you really felt invested in the business and the people. And I get that when I'm involved in the deal, I really want absolutely everything to go very well. When we say we're going to look after our people, I really want to look after our people. You know, there's all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah, I'm curious. Like, the definition of success is very objective in a financial way, but it sounds like the opinion of success or failure is very subjective. And when you're setting up an integration team, how much do you focus on the optics or the internal marketing of the project? Because I can imagine you could even spin a project culturally, if you will, or socially as a very big success, even though you've just lost your shirt. I get that. Yeah.
So the way I describe that to people is I'm afraid I always have to split things into two or three things because it's never as simple. So you're the CEO you own the business, we're buying something else. So firstly, let's discuss how you're going to explain this to investors. So you're an employee in a company, and you talk to your boss about your yearly salary and bonus. Every year you have a discussion. So your boss says, you know, if you improve this, that, and the other, you'll get your bonus. Okay. What ideally I would like you to do is say, okay, if I turn up to work at 9 o'clock every day and I wear a shirt and a tie, I get my bonus. Okay. So let's take that into M&A. I would like to think about the deal and the integration. I'd like to pick three or four or even maximum five things we know we can do. We're going to increase sales by 100%. Fine. Can you guarantee sales will go up 10%? Okay. We're going to remove 5% of the people to deliver a 50 million saving, whatever. Let's write a list of things that you guarantee you can do. And as we buy the company, that's what we're going to explain to people. 6 months later, 9 months later, we'll have another call with investors. Right, we've done number one. We said that we were going to do this. We've done number two. We said we're going to do this. Number three and number four are in planning and on track, and we anticipate doing well. And number five, we haven't started because that was part of our plan. We anticipate starting that now, and we hope that that will go to plan. We'll you know, update you on the next investor call 6 months later. Oh, now we've done one, two, three, four. We've hit our synergies. We've done. Now, we might be doing a two-year integration, but we've done the bulk of the change, the bulk of the work, and we can't be, you know, if we buy a company every year and they're two-year integrations, we need to be talking about business as usual and how we're moving forward. And we need to be creating the story that is success and explaining that we've hit what we said we would hit. We need to, investors need to know that we are in charge of the business. Now, that's obvious once we discuss and explain it. And we've got, you know, professionals that within our company or externals that will help us with that. Now, the other part of this discussion is that internal discussion you said. There's always going to be, every competitor is incentivized to explain that our deal is going poorly to our customers, to the press. Mm. Every press story, when you watch the news tonight, it's not Danny baked a cake and isn't life wonderful. News stories are interesting because something went wrong. And so to a certain extent, we might imagine most people are incentivized to explain that our deal has gone poorly or incorrectly. If we have 100,000 people and we integrate 25,000 people, I can't guarantee all 25,000 people are going to be happy. There's going to be one or two, or maybe we make 5% redundant. There's going to be more than two people unhappy. So the discussion that the deal is being incorrectly managed, that there's things going wrong, there's always a certain amount of noise. And the discussion is, how do we plan and understand what that noise is going to be given our plans? You know, I've done turnaround deals where the business was going to go bust and we bought another business and the aim was to remove 60% of the people. And you know, we had interesting discussions with unions. So I'll call it noise. That might be not the right words. But given our deal, what are our plans? We know our plans for a year or two. What are our communication plans that go with those through from top to bottom? So if we're going to implement a new IT system in 6 months' time, some of the people are going to be annoyed that they're changing IT system. You know, how much noise is that? How much training are we going to give them? Are there going to be people that can't use the new system and so they disappear? How does this all work? And so what I like is not just strategic plans for every part of the business and every business unit, every country, every work stream. But as we get our, you know, our direction, we move from where we are today to our end state, more detailed plans. And as we get into more detailed plans, what are the human aspects of those? And I want HR to look at all of the human parts of all of our integration plans, just as I get finance to look at all of the finance bits of our integration plans. And then we look at, well, where are we going to be changing people, changing their thoughts, changing the culture? Where are people going to be annoyed? And let's plan for that as best we can. And so all of this discussion, you do see some people who haven't done this before start with a blank page. They don't necessarily plan as well as they could. They don't realize some of these things are going to pop up. You know, if you've done this for 30 years, you go, well, if we do this, that might happen and this person will be annoyed. let's sort this out before it happens. And you as an experienced business person, when it comes to your area of the business, you know, I sit down with you and you will be able to say, oh, Danny, if you do this, you know, these are some of the things that will happen. And I bring my experience from deals across all sectors, but I also need your experience for your particular part of the business. And you've been in the company, you know the people, you know the company, you know the customers. And so it needs to be a together, you know, plan and a together march forward. It's really your company. You know, as you were saying, you were in a deal last year.
Multiple. And the, I guess, planning for the optics of success, planning for the certainty of some dismay, and understanding that the change will certainly have an impact on people. And when I'm triggered, and it's a great little segue into, again, the book. I'm holding the book up. If you're watching by video, you can see it. M&A Integration, How to Do It, Planning and Delivering M&A Integration for Business Success. And one of the things in here was in Appendix 2, the culture difference assessment. And there's a list of, I guess, cultural indicators that I thought was kind of fun in here, like office size, you know, like company parking, company perks, how people are developed, job titles, I guess these are some things that you wouldn't necessarily know to look for up front, because I think when you're going to get friction between humans, it's on this stuff. On, wait a second, my office is now half the size because we are having to comply with, you know, these people who acquired us, or you know, oh my God, I have to go 15 times more meetings because whatever. Are these things that you can know up front? Or is this stuff that you just have to kind of discover? Like have you had that conversation with people on say job titles? You know, do you have heads of managers, or do you avoid titles like that? Like, because these are the things that can, I think, maybe make or break people's actual engagement and checking into the whole process.
Yeah. So we can find this out pre-deal, some of the cultural differences. And actually, I worked for a very good company. I was very impressed with them. They actually thought about the company they might want to buy and started hiring some people. And so when I turned up as integration director pre-deal and started saying, well, what do you know about them? And they started saying, well, we know quite a lot about them. And they started telling me stuff. And they said, well, we've got you in before the due diligence, because actually, we've hired 4 or 5 people from them during the last year, and under the guise of being a project manager, general change and just investigating things, you can start planning with them. And so I started planning with not only the executives, but I didn't get access to people but the executives then went and talked to them. And, you know, so you're talking to an executive and saying, well, what do we know about this company? And they went, let me go and ask Bob. I hired Bob last year. He works for me. So we know all about this. So there are ways to find out lots of information about target companies. You can talk to customers, you can talk to employees. Now, then that gets slightly more complicated. So are we going to buy this company? Let's pretend we buy it for £1 billion and there's 200 million additional profit to be made because we integrate them well. Are we going to not buy them because there are some cultural differences? Absolutely not. All we're going to say is, how difficult is it going to be to integrate them, and is there more cost? So maybe the cost goes up. And so we do buy companies that are very culturally different, and that's not necessarily an issue. We can partially integrate, we can fully integrate. Really, it's a matter of how do we plan our integration and take those things into account, and where does it annoy people? So we might say, this is going to annoy some people, and so we're going to lose, there will be more attrition than we would have liked. We do specifically go and look at, do analysis on who are the key people pre-deal, and certainly post-deal as part of our HR work stream. We go, well, what are the key parts of the deal? What are the key parts of the integration? And who are the people that have the knowledge around that? And how do we ensure that we keep those, even if we annoy them? And so you can know that you're going to annoy people. And then there's the discussion about how hard are we going to go on the integration? So when we talk about cultural change, when I give talks on this, I make a little sort of comment around, a French company buying an English company, we're going to integrate. Well, fine, we can integrate the cultures, but the French people are still all French and the English people are still all English. And if we buy a German company, they're all still German. So if we look at a large company like a FTSE 100.
As an American, that's all European. So those people are all exactly the same, right?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Oh, obviously, there are different HR laws. So I would caution, I've done some deals with an American company where the American company bought in Europe and then just believed we could instantly change people. And there are different laws and regulations in Europe that various different countries need to know about. So, but yes, I've worked in manufacturing and oil and gas. So let's pretend we're a large manufacturing company and we have excellent health and safety. We buy a smaller company, their health and safety really isn't up to scratch. So we need to plan not only how to spend more money in health and safety to bring them up to scratch. We don't want people dying on our watch. If you're the executive of a company, the moment we buy a target, you're in trouble if someone dies on day one, if there's a fire. So we discuss, we buy a company at 9 o'clock at night. Day one communications is 9 o'clock the next day where we tell everyone we bought it, but we owned it since 9 o'clock last night. What happens if someone dies in the manufacturing plant in a 24-hour plant before we've told everyone we own them? Well, we need to put something in place. So it's going back to there's just so many little things, as we bring them up to speed on health and safety, essentially we're discussing how do we change people's mindset around health and safety. So first we try and change their actions. I don't want you to kill anyone when you go to work tomorrow, Chris. And then I want to try and change the way you think. So it's not just you're not allowed to kill anybody. Over the next year, I want to impose upon your brain, you don't want to kill anyone. And so
asking too much.
So if I'm thinking about integrating or changing the culture, this goes back again to the same as all the other projects. There's a cost benefit. This is going to cost me a lot of money to change your behavior and a lot of money to change your thinking. And people ask me, the HR director says, well, how do we know this will work? Actually, I can't. We do all the actions, we do all the things, and generally it works, but I can't guarantee I'm going to be able to change people's actions and modes and thinking. And so do we want to? And also, is it worth it?
When you mix two populations of humans with different cultures, then the influence will be both ways. It's not like you can say, okay, well, we're going to impose our safety regimen on them and we are immune, meaning those people will start, socializing and different practices, some good, some bad. So some of this is completely, I think, impossible to determine. But earlier in our conversation, you called this a game. And I'm curious, the deals that I've been involved in my corporate career, acquisitions, also large system implementations, which have a kind of a similar pattern because it's very all encompassing, carve outs, corporate startups, starting new opcos. These are some of the most fun times that I've had in my career, meaning, because this is when, but maybe this is my personality, just stuff is in turmoil. The world is upside down. And it can be so much fun and also quite scary, because how do you, what I appreciate about your style is just your calm discipline in saying it as it is. Honestly, it makes me itch a little bit that cultural transformation is simply down to a business case, but you're right. I take a much more human perspective to it. So I think, between the two of us, we would balance it out and
I was CFO of a listed company, so I put my money hat on, but I sit down with the HR director. And so the HR directors are taking the human side of it. And we're saying, you might be saying, right, let's integrate everyone. I go, wait a second. What cultural changes do you want to make, and how much is it going to cost, and is it worthwhile, and can you deliver it, and let's discuss how we're going to deliver it. And then suddenly it's, oh, yep, we haven't done that before. How do you do this, Danny? It's like, well, yeah. I'm going to do it where it's useful and worthwhile, as opposed to having fights. So I was talking to a guy the other day. They're buying a company for a certain particular reason, and he's been put in charge of integration. And he's been gone off to the finance director and said, how should we integrate? What do we want to do? He's got no interest at all. And so we discussed that for quite a while. And I said, well, if there's no synergies and there's no need to integrate and the finance director doesn't want to integrate, focus on why you're buying the company. You said we're buying a company for this reason. And this is so just go and do that. It's actually complex enough that when you do that, we'll need HR, finance and IT to support that. So you will be. But don't push water uphill. If they're, you know, where's the money in the deal? That's go and focus on that, and you get a pat on the back for making money. And later on, you'll find that, you know, as you buy two more companies, you know the finance director will be desperate to start tidying up finance and integrating finance.
Well, I want to come back to you on the game thing. For you, what do you mean by it's a game, and how does that inspire you to do this work? Meaning. By game, that implies somehow fun. What is the game for you, and why does that excite you?
Okay, so let me again split that into two bits. So the first bit is the M&A integration. So I don't see that as a game. I see that as hard work, but I'm improving a company and improving everybody's lot within the company. And so I believe I'm helping the company and the world make more money and do well, and I enjoy that, and I believe I'm very helpful and good at that. So I like that. People, you know, you can see that in meetings. So I don't see that as a game. I see that as enjoyable, just as you said you enjoyed them. The way I see it as a game is if I go up a level from the integration to the CEO level and think about buying a company. So if you go and buy a house, you've got the buyer and the seller, you've got the lawyers, and you've got an estate agent. And providing you understand the experience of each of the players in that group and what they're trying to achieve, then you've got a better chance of doing well in buying the house, in your outcome. So now if I take the CEO of a company that has never really bought anything before, and they step up and they buy something quite large. So you buy a little one for 10 million, little medium or another little one for 100. And then your board says, brilliant, go for a $1 billion deal. We'll really change this company. So now you're dealing with some bankers. Bankers don't get paid generally to do the deal. They get a cut of the purchase price if the deal goes ahead. So I'm sure no one would act like this, but if I were to put on my silly hat and say, let me just paint them into a corner, they might be incentivized by very, very large fees to try and get the deal done. And that's actually what we want them to do. We don't want the deal not to happen. But if I were going to estimate synergies, I'm a manager type of person. So let's pretend there's £100 of synergies. I'm a manager type person. I work in the company. I would like to guess 99. And then I've got leeway to deliver 100. But if I guess 99, the valuation model will put the purchase price slightly lower down. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got less likelihood of buying a company. So now I work for a bank. I'm a banker. The synergies are £100. No one really knows they're £100. We estimate what they are. So I'm a banker. I'm incentivized to estimate £101. And so my valuation is higher. I've got more chance that my client buys the company. This deal happens. I make my whatever large bonus. And so if I hire an internal person to estimate synergies, or if I hire an integration person who has to deliver them, if I hire a person who never has to deliver them and gets a bonus, if the valuation is higher, what I'm saying is, If we think of it in game theory, in the way that there are a number of different players, and the way my CEO, who I work for, I'm helping you to buy a company, My advice is that if you can understand what each person in that game, their incentive is, what they're trying to do, how they do it, and try to manage them as best you can, and you're at a disadvantage because they've been doing this 20, 30 years. They've done multiple deals. They know exactly what to say and how to do it. And this is your first deal, and you have no idea what they're talking about. And so in that sense, the way I explain it to MBAs at London Business School or Cambridge or wherever is, think of it as a game, and you are the ringmaster of the game, and you need to know exactly how the game works and what everyone's trying to do. And then you've got a substantially better chance of doing well on the basis of, if you buy a company well, you'll get a bonus and be brilliant and do well. And if you botch it up, you'll be out. We have management teams that mess things up, and they get, the CEO gets fired a year later and the rest of the management team, 16 months later. And business as usual, they all decided to spend more time with their family and play golf. But, we know exactly why they left. And so if you mess up a large enough deal, that really can affect your company seriously. And so this understanding how the game works, there might be a better way of wording it. Understanding what you're up to is a definite benefit to you as a CEO.
It's fun. It's exciting. It's career making, or maybe career breaking. And it can be seen as a game. I think, like management in a way, it can be very healthy to see leadership or executive reindeer games as a game as well. Because a lot of this is can be really silly stuff, and knowing what incentives and drives people and what their ambition is will tell you a lot about how the game will be played. So, Danny Davis, if people are listening and they would like someone by their side who has played the game before, then give Danny a call. Of course, you can buy the book, M&A Integration by Danny A. Davis. It's a no nonsense book, meaning, as is Danny's style, it's really to the point, pragmatic, packed with wisdom. And you can also find him at ddavisconsulting.com. And there's a bunch of videos under our insights. And you can find more from Danny, just these little bite-sized, snacks of like M&A integration steering group, integration tracking at board level, what different types of integration are there. So there's lots of little things in there you can start eating, and gets a lot of real direct value. Danny, thanks so much. This is excellent. And as we have had a number of conversations, it's always interesting, always valuable, and always to the point. So Danny Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Thank you for listening. Download the Simplicity Toolkit from ebullience.com to discover the power of the Simplicity Scan and Sprint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.